Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Everything is about money. I think this is sad. The words of Ajax manager Alfred Schreuder amid reports Manchester United are on the cusp of prizing Antony from the Dutch club for a staggering 100 million euros. I'm Heath Pierce filling in for LME, and I'm joined by Jonathan Johnson to discuss the latest mega Premier League transfer in a summer window full of mega Premier League transfers in a summer window. It's been wild. Plus, we'll be analyzing what we've witnessed so far from the top five leagues this weekend. Que Golazo begins right now. JJ, now before we get into it, it's been a wild summer so far. We're going to get into this weekend's results, but let's start with how you're doing and also Antony to Manchester United. So first, how you doing, man?
Doing very well, thanks. Welcome back onto the show. It's been a while. I know I've been missing your cheese pizza quips all summer long, so delighted we're finally getting this this one-to-one time, man. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Well, obviously, I'm a little bit rusty because I went through and just kept reading the same line over and over again in my introduction, but I'm doing good now. I'm settling in. You know what I mean? It's like getting that first pass right in the match where it's like you want to connect that first pass, then you settle into the match, and hopefully this goes a little bit better than my words so far. But let's talk about Antony to Manchester United. You know, David Ornstein and Fabrizio reporting that it's a 100 million euro deal, that the deal is essentially done. I mean, what's your take on this, especially in a year like this where we haven't seen sort of massive transfers happening like we've seen in years past?
Yeah, I mean, my first thoughts, honestly, I'm not sure Antony is worth that kind of money. I don't think that he is necessarily a Manchester United player. But what is a Manchester United player these days, you know, judging by sort of the standards of recent seasons? So if United want to go and blow that sort of money on somebody like Antony, I mean, he's a talent, don't get me wrong. You know, and it doesn't surprise me that you know, with all due respect to Ajax, that some of the bigger clubs in Europe have been looking at him. But at that price, I think it's only really a desperate club, you know, that stumps up that kind of money. And United, despite their form picking up in the last couple of matches, you know, they won this weekend, beating Liverpool as well was sort of an early turning point in Ten Hag's tenure. You know, I still feel that there is a massive sense of desperation around there. You know, they've got the shadow of CR7 looming large. And, you know, for me, I think it doesn't surprise me the way that Antony has handled this, you know, because, you know, a kind of move like this doesn't come around, you know, that often. So it doesn't surprise me to see him pushing for it. But I'm unconvinced that he is really the kind of player that United should be spending 100 million on. And I kind of feel like this is more indicative of, you know, just how poorly, you know, their transfer window was planned out, really. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it. I mean, obviously, it sucks for Ajax. They've lost so many star talents, you know, this summer. They're always kind of like in a perennial sense of rebuild, but it does. I can understand why Schreuder is so frustrated, you know, this late in the transfer window, you know, losing another key piece. But also at the same time, I mean, for you, maybe speaking from experience, when you've seen like a teammate, you know, who wants away, I mean, surely it's better to, you know, to get that kind of poisonous influence out of the squad, because he's made it very clear, you know, he doesn't want to be there in Amsterdam anymore.
Yeah, and obviously he signed a five-year deal, which I believe runs for another 3 years or so. So the valuation of him exists where Ajax still hold all of the cards, but 100 million, I just don't see, even in the peak of insane transfers, it was always hard to justify that type of price tag for any player, right? Let alone a player who had a fantastic year last year and obviously very good in the Champions League, shows that he can play at the highest level, but to come in, the conversion on that and the pressure on that to convert that into some sort of 100 million euro result or output just seems nearly impossible. Plus, for a player like that, I'm thinking from the Manchester United side. Now, if it wasn't a Ten Hag who had worked with him, who has this belief in like, this guy is going to be it, and it's just going to cost this much money, I would say it feels desperate. But clearly, Ten Hag feels like he needs this player, right? Like, but I mean, where does he go in your opinion into this lineup, and how, what kind of output do you think is successful? Like, if you were to remove the price tag, I mean, what would he have to do to be able to take Manchester United from where they are? Yes, they've grinded out their last two results and they've seen a turnaround. And Ten Hag said, now the players know what it's going, like what it takes to get results in the Premier League. But what kind of output do you think is going to actually take this team from where they are now to being essentially a top six or a top four team?
I mean, honestly, I think when you're paying that kind of money, I think it's reasonable to expect from an attacking talent like him, you know, somebody who's able to score and create goals, you know, that he's sort of breaking into double figures in at least one of, you know, the two categories that he can. And, you know, to be honest, I really think that they should be expecting him to, you know, return sort of double figures in both over the course of a season. Perhaps
do you
not
think that's
his,
like
his
Hazard type years, Coutinho type year? I mean, do you think it needs to be at that upper end of like pushing towards top scorer, pushing towards assists or somewhere in the middle of that? I mean, 100 million is insane.
Yeah, but so much of this now depends on what happens with Ronaldo. We're ticking into the last few days of the transfer window, and despite so many of the rumors, so much noise, it doesn't seem like there is like an obvious destination at this moment in time for the Portuguese superstar. So, I mean, I think a lot of, you know, what Antony's role might be for United will be dictated by how that attack, you know, looks, whether it has Ronaldo in it, whether it doesn't. Because if it doesn't, then, you know, I think that there's a much better opportunity for somebody like an Antony to come in, for Ten Hag to, you know, really form the attack in the way that he wants to with the players that he trusts. And that will probably be more, you know, more productive. But, you know, if Ronaldo stays, I mean, honestly, I cannot see the situation changing that much around United if he's there sort of, you know, sulking sort of in and out of the team. You know, everybody knows that he wants to go somewhere where he can be playing Champions League football. You know, so I think it's now imperative that, you know, assuming that United do get this deal for Antony over the line, you know, that they also get a deal over the line which sees Cristiano Ronaldo go somewhere else, because that will make Ten Hag so much his job so much easier in accommodating Antony and actually enable, you know, him to, you know, to be able to bed in properly, find his feet and, you know, start returning on that massive transfer fee pretty quickly. Because, you know, let's not forget, this is a United squad that still has a lot of attacking talent there. You Jadon Sancho obviously scored against Liverpool. You know, you've got Martial, I know, who looked, you know, pretty sharp in preseason. So, you know, there are guys with a lot of talent that can be tapped into and better utilized. And I think sort of CR7 moving on is kind of key to that. Now, I don't know how you feel about, you know, whether Cristiano Ronaldo can be potentially compatible with somebody like Antony and the other attacking talents that Ten Hag has at his disposal. But for me, it feels like a bit of a useless exercise if Ronaldo isn't going to be moved on.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it feels like this transfer, this type of money or spending is going to be potentially the tool needed for Ten Hag to move Cristiano on, of saying, hey, we've spent all this on this, the team is moving on, we're in a new era, we need to be able to move on from this, as opposed to, we all know, the Ronaldo Man United caters to the way Ronaldo plays, and his output can be fantastic, but it mostly, everything has to funnel through him. So call to action for all of you live viewers: is Antony worth the money? And obviously, we had a few points in here, JJ, about you know, Sinisterra being signed for a quarter of the price, and his output was better than Antony in the Eredivisie. We also have just the fact that, like, you're only worth what somebody's willing to pay for you. And if somebody's willing to pay for you, it's not your fault as a player, right? He wants to move because you're going from Ajax to Manchester United. It's, in theory, a bigger move for you. So it's not necessarily on him. The market dictates these types of transfers, although I think the market has cooled off quite a bit. We're in like a bordering on a global recession. So this type of money certainly feels like, you know, somebody going for what they want and willing to pay what they have to. But do you think that this has anything to do with maybe forcing the hand of Ronaldo moving out, and the fact that you've now invested heavily into this? You've also got Ilanga, another player that could find themselves deeper, that has a lot of potential, that's getting more minutes. I mean, how do you think this actually shapes up in terms of Ten Hag and Manchester United forcing, almost forcing this transfer at an astronomical sum?
Yeah, I mean, I do kind of feel like there is sort of kind of like a power play element to it, you know, because it is a sign that, right, United are backing Ten Hag, you know, and they will ultimately probably cede to Ronaldo's desire to go and play Champions League football as well. I mean, obviously, it doesn't necessarily sort of paint the club in the healthiest of lights right now, but I ultimately think they'll be in a better place for it if, you know, both of those things happen, because I think it's important for them to bet back Ten Hag as he's trying to, you know, not just overhaul United as a team on the pitch, but sort of overhaul the culture surrounding the team, you know, getting them, you know, to think more proactively, you know, basically just creating a more healthy environment around the squad and getting them focused on playing football again. So, yeah, I mean, I do think that the size of this transfer is definitely designed to you know, to sort of push Ronaldo to the exit door at Old Trafford in many ways. And let's not forget as well, you know, Antony is coming in at a major cost in terms of the transfer fee, but his salary won't be the same level as Cristiano Ronaldo. So assuming that United can get CR7 off the books, you know, there will be some kind of financial balancing act there, you know, that sees, you know, United take less of a hit than they would if, you know, Ronaldo stayed and was eating up a massive salary and Antony was added to this group. So, you know, I definitely think that it is, you know, now going to be a very interesting last few days of the transfer window with regards to what happens to Ronaldo, because it's almost like giving him the green light to, you know, to go and make a move somewhere else. It's whether, you know, that potential club that could provide the landing spot for him can make the space available.
Yeah, it's space and it's also finances, as we've continued to see a lot of teams looking to put it on Manchester United, knowing that the leverage is on all the other clubs to say, hey, we'll take him, but you're going to have to eat up some of the salary. You're going to have to take on or bear some of the responsibility of your own actions. So let's move on now to the Wolves Newcastle match. Obviously, JJ, I know that you were watching a different match perhaps, but there were two absolute bangers in this one, and Newcastle almost coming from behind, hitting the bar late in the match, but a really controlled game at home for Wolves that led to, you know, them looking comfortable, but ultimately Newcastle almost finding their way back in this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, both sides, I guess, will be content with a point at the end of the day, considering that on paper, this looked quite a tricky match for both sides. Obviously, Newcastle being the new money, well, new money aside from Nottingham Forest. And, you know, Wolves have kind of come back into a bit of form, you know, after dropping off, you know, for a little while, especially last season. I know that, you know, some amongst us were expecting them to maybe even be battling relegation this season. You know, so it was a really interesting match to kind of follow while I was watching the Villa one. I mean, I have seen the goals. I haven't sort of seen the match and been able to pick it apart in too fine a detail, but, you know, fantastic from Alan Saint-Maximin. Again, to save the point for Newcastle. And, you know, the guy is just a joy to watch. You know, he's box office. You know, there was a lot of talent on display in this match. And, you know, I'm happy as well for Gonzalo Guedes, somebody who I saw move to PSG from Benfica a few years ago, didn't work out for him in Paris, ended up moving on to Valencia. And as we know, Valencia is kind of a bit, one of those kind of weird projects where you don't really know you know, how the club is going to get back to the heights that they once scaled, you know, so to see him in the Premier League finding his feet quite quickly, you know, that's encouraging, because I think that could make a huge difference for Wolves. And obviously there's a lot of speculation that Kaladzic might join from Stuttgart between now and the end of the transfer window. So, you know, I think there's two teams, you know, with the makings of having, you know, some very interesting seasons individually, you know, and I think ultimately the draw was probably the fair result. I don't know if you have any views on that, whether you feel that Jimenez's ruled out goal was just or unjust.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question in terms of the just or unjust. What I want to quickly touch on though, with regard to that matchup, there is obviously the club record signing of Alexander Isak. Your take on the addition he could be? Obviously, this is a player that started at Dortmund under all the hype, couldn't find his feet there, then goes to Real Sociedad, does quite well there. Still, I think he's 22, 23, or 22 years old. You know, what's your take on his ability to now provide something different for this team. Because if you looked at Saint-Maximin, obviously on the dribble was what was is kind of a runaway train at times, but is able to score his first goal since the beginning of the year. I think it was January was his last goal or something like that. Now you have somebody who's a proven goal scorer that brings a different dynamic, but also that speed that you want in the attack. I mean, what's your take on this signing in terms of how he's going to be able to contribute?
Yeah, I mean, Isak, I think, is definitely a sort of an investment for the future. I mean, I rate him. I think that he has a lot of as yet untapped potential. And obviously, we've seen flashes of brilliance from him as well, not only at club level, but also at international level as well. You know, he did look very bright for Sweden in Euro 2020. I feel like it's a lot, especially given that sort of statistically, when you're looking at the season that he had with Sociedad, it wasn't particularly that impressive. But then again, he is somebody who has, a fair amount of experience for somebody so young. You know, he's been around, he's experienced a couple of different big club environments.
Yeah. And his numbers weren't huge last year, by the way. Year before, he had a fantastic season, 17 goals, 2 assists in La Liga. But last year, only 6 goals, 2 assists, if I'm reading this correctly.
Yeah, I mean, I think as well, Newcastle's view on making this deal is that they're investing in someone who has shown that he has, long-term potential. He's not like a flash in the pan, somebody you just have one good season and they're buying him off the back of that. So I guess it's almost more encouraging in that way that they're not just basing this purchase on what they saw from him last season. He's somebody that they feel is fitting their vision for the future, how they're going to put that team together. So yeah, I'm curious to see sort of how it plays out once, they have all of their strikers fit and available to Eddie Howe. And I think that Newcastle are forming a very, very good competitive squad, with some fantastic players who, at some point in the near future are going to be knocking on the door of Europe. I don't know if it will be immediately this season, but obviously I think that they will not be flirting at the wrong end of the table as they were last campaign. But for me, I think that, this moment for Newcastle now is about putting the building blocks in place for them to be really competitive next season and definitely getting themselves into Europe. I'm not saying that it won't happen this season, because obviously they have players of the necessary caliber to get themselves into continental competition, but it's a long season. Let's see how it plays out. But I don't know if you feel that Newcastle are almost kind of there in terms of having the squad to compete for, at least maybe Europa League qualification already.
Yeah, I feel like maybe they're off the pace of that. But as you said, building for the future, I think, is an important sign, one for the fans. And it's not just about the results today, but it's about, hey, we're building this thing up. This is going to be a multi-year build until we can get Newcastle back to what we feel was the glory days in terms of the product they put on the field and their ability to compete for a European spot. And then hopefully in Europe at that point. Let's talk quickly on Villa West Ham. Obviously, your Aston Villa gave the Hammers their first goal of the season, 4 games into the year, and end up dropping all 3 points against West Ham, who get that W. What was your overall takeaway in this game from the Villa side, as well as what you saw from West Ham?
Well, yeah, obviously Villa are going to be the team that give, a winless side their first points of the season. So I wasn't surprised in that respect. To me, ultimately, it's very disappointing. I won't bore you with too many of the details right now, but it just feels like something is definitely, not right at Villa. I don't think that's all necessarily down to Steven Gerrard. I feel like it's more like a club directional kind of thing. And I think Villa definitely are in a difficult situation now. They've got a tough run of games coming up. I don't see the results picking up. And there's sort of player discontent, within the squad. It doesn't bode well for Gerrard. So I'm interested to see sort of how Villa react, especially given that, you probably wouldn't expect many, if any, points in the coming games. So, I think that gets the monkey off the back for West Ham, and they'll probably start to pick up points and form now. For Villa, it feels pretty bleak at this moment in time.
Wow, yeah. And we're going to get to some other Premier League results and just the importance of early season points here in a little bit. But let's talk about Celtic joining Liverpool on cloud nine. You see what our producer Des did there in terms of
working. He's a Brian Adams fan.
Yeah, working with numbers in such a creative way. But, Dundee United get thrashed. Greatest margin of victory on the road for that Celtic were able to come with. Obviously, Liverpool as well, just putting a beating up. I think that ties the record for largest goal margin, but also I think the first half goals, it was like 6-0 or something like that. For Celtic specifically, the theme is always, yeah, but they don't do well in Europe, right? Do you think that there's maybe something different about this team, or is this a one-off isolated result? I mean, could it be a better year for them? They obviously open up against Real Madrid, who, you know, are only fall victim to Shakhtar Donetsk when it comes to opening opening matches in the Champions League.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, having sampled Celtic Park on a European night, it is a really special atmosphere. And I think now, you know, they certainly seem to have a team that kind of is worthy, you know, of that kind of backing when they go into Europe. I'm really impressed with what Postecoglou's managed to achieve with this team so far, how he's managed to turn the club around, especially at the time when Rangers looked so far ahead. And now that gap, it's not quite as obvious, despite Rangers getting to the Europa League final last season. Kyogo, I'm a big fan of his. I think it's only a matter of time before some bigger European clubs come knocking and try and prize him away. And I think as well, you know, bringing in that kind of new talent, Celtic, you know, moved away from kind of going to like sort of like your journeyman British, you know, players who have, you know, perhaps fallen out of favor in the Premier League, not quite good enough for that, or, you know, wanted to try something that was maybe a little more glamorous than sort of mid-table in the Championship. They've gone for new talent, and suddenly there's, you know, a vibrancy to this Celtic side, certainly more so than the last couple of Celtic teams we saw in Europe before, you know, things really started to suffer from a major downturn. So do I think that they can pull off a shock in this group? I'm not necessarily sure, but I think that they could fight for third place and to drop into the Europa League, which is probably more realistic for the likes of Celtic and Rangers to be targeting at the moment, as Rangers showed last season. But no, I mean, I feel like this team, you know, has some real sort of like, not necessarily hidden gems, because obviously we're talking about them, but sort of, you know, players who I think a lot of people are going to discover during the Champions League group stage once it kicks off in a week or so's time. I don't know how you kind of feel about this new generation of Celtic talent, but for me, it seems like the sort of the most exciting Celtic side that has probably, you know, emerged in at least 10 years.
Well, yeah, I think that the Rangers-Celtic rivalry, in terms of battling for first place, if you look at those teams, it's first or failure, right? When it comes to winning the Scottish League. And now that that competition is back, it seems like both clubs have had to go a little bit deeper to say, what's our actual philosophy? Like you said, we can't just have the fallout of Premier League players or big names or mid-table players that want to come over and be part of this project. We need to actually start building a little bit more of a competitive team and kind of change the way that they play. So I certainly think that's brought out the best in terms of going with different signings, which is a risk, but seems to be paying off so far. Now, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we've got three talking points from Saturday. We've got a little bit of Arsenal talk, and we've got our final thoughts with you, JJ, as you head out to the Parc des Princes. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everybody, welcome Welcome back to Que Golazo Pod. And just a reminder, Paramount Plus is the only place to stream every minute of every Serie A match. And you can quickly and easily sign up for your very own account right now with a free 1 month trial by going to paramountplus.com/Italy. Just click the try it free button. You just click that and use the promo code Italy for instant access to the best Italian club soccer available across all of your devices. Visit paramountplus.com/Italy and start streaming today. Now, JJ, back into it a little bit. We're going to have three talking points from Saturday. And obviously, I want to get your take if you have some talking points outside of the realms of but this is the parameters that we've set so far. Roma getting that point in Turin. Obviously, we continue to see the Italian or Serie A be a wide open league. I don't believe there's anybody that's perfect on the campaign. I believe everybody's given up points so far, three matches into the season. But Roma snatching a point in Turin, how important is that for their quest? But also in just sort of the leveling of the start of the season for Serie A.
I'm not entirely surprised by this result because I predicted before the season started that I thought Roma would probably close the gap on some of the stronger teams in the league and make a better fist of trying to get into the Champions League spots, tip them for Coppa Italia success as well. So we'll see how that one plays out. But I think Jose Mourinho's pragmatism is really coming to the fore. I mean, admittedly, against a Juve side that, you know, are not at their best so far this season, I still think that they'll pick up faster than they did last campaign, Juve. But, you know, I think, you know, missing, you know, new key players like Angel Di Maria doesn't help. I know Rabiot picked up an injury as well, despite the fact that Allegri tried to move him on. So, you know, Roma, I think, as long as they can avoid defeats in those kind of games, that's what's going to allow them to stay in touch and potentially, you know, remain competitive for Champions League qualification, which I think has to be the aim now if Mourinho is to push on this Roma project. But I'm going to flip it around for you. I mean, do you think that, you know, Juve are in danger, you know, this season, because we've seen Allegri try to make some moves, freshen up this squad a bit. He's been unable to so far. Paredes hasn't arrived from PSG. They tried to move on Rabiot. He's still stuck with him there. And it kind of feels like they're going to be relying on Vlahovic's brilliance, kind of like Fiorentina were before he moved there. And obviously Juve have, you know, quality injured players like Chiesa to come back, but it's almost like, you know, this Juve side feel like they're going to be sort of hamstrung for at least quarter of the season before they have like their full repertoire of talent available to Allegri.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And obviously the Pogba injury and just the rotation of the squad. And maybe it's just me looking into it too much, but it feels like Juventus have sort of settled into being a team that competes for a Scudetto. Not that the team, if you look at the roster's past, they were way out in front of everybody, right? In terms of the quality they had in every position, the depth in every position. And it felt like Serie A automatic, Champions League is the goal type of thing that you see in terms of the roster that they had built. But now, while they've got depth, while they've got quality, like you said, it seems like Vlahovic is going to be the one that has to carry them if they want to even win the league, let alone, you know, what their chances are, you know, in other competitions. So I agree with you. Or at least I feel that this is a team that is going to struggle to keep pace all year long because there is multiple teams now that have lifted their levels. And then they're a team that I just don't see where everything is going to come from in terms of getting results consistently across an entire season.
No, absolutely. And I think that, you know, Allegri is, I mean, I can see things getting a bit tough in the next couple of weeks. Don't think it's the easiest Champions League group that they've been drawn into, obviously with PSG, but also with Benfica, Maccabi Haifa. You know, none of those games are going to be easy on the road. Home form is going to be absolutely key. And Allegri, you know, he wasn't even hiding when he was asked about it in one of his press conferences the other day. He's saying that, you know, their qualification is going to play out against Benfica. It's not going to play out against PSG. And I think that illustrates exactly what you were saying just then. Like, Juve have settled into this sort of being one of the chasing pack now, as opposed to being the team that sort of sets the pace domestically. And I think that might be sort of a longer term worry for Juve.
Yeah, and obviously on the Roma front, adding Andrea Belotti to the team certainly adds more firepower to them and their ambition of being more competitive or trying to, you know, compete for a spot at the top of the table in Serie A. So it'll be interesting to see where he actually fits into the lineup with Tammy Abraham continuing to score goals for the club. Do you have any thoughts on this signing and where he could fit into the overall landscape?
Yeah, I mean, I was curious to see where he would end up because obviously we've known that he was leaving Torino for a while. There was some speculation that he might go to Major League Soccer, especially with Toronto's push for like almost like an Italification of the squad. But then there were some rumors about Monaco, and then ultimately, it emerges that Roma was the best destination for him. Mourinho, is convinced that he can get a tune out of him consistently. And, it feels like a good fit, and perhaps having that established sort of, I guess guaranteed 10 to 15 goal striker, that could really help to boost this Roma side because, it hasn't been the most prolific of starts to the season for Tammy Abraham as great a talent as he is. And I think, this kind of move, especially given that it's on a free transfer, takes a bit of the weight of expectation off of the likes of Abraham, perhaps frees them up. And then also, it's going to allow, Dybala a little bit more freedom and a bit less pressure as well to start delivering.
Well, as a reminder for anybody that's listening to this in audio form, we are recording this at 11 a.m. Eastern time on a Sunday. So there are still matches to be played, including the Spurs Forest match. We've got Barcelona and Real Madrid still to be played. And then in the Italian league, Atalanta and Napoli still looking to kick off their matches. So if you don't hear about it, it's because of the time in which we are recording this. This podcast. Now, JJ, let's talk about the Haaland hat trick. I mean, unbelievable turnaround. I was, from an American standpoint, all I was watching is Chris Richards getting put in the 56th minute, being up 2-1, and then all of a sudden it all crumbling and saying, this is definitely going to fall on us. But in terms of his output, right, and the fact that you're now playing with a traditional or true number nine, whatever he is, he's a machine, but like a different type of striker within Manchester City, now finding their way back into it from 2-0 down to coming back and through a Haaland hat trick, unbelievable performance from him and starting to see that form continue to increase. Do you think that we're seeing just the beginnings of what Manchester City could be with him up top?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it was inevitable at some point that there would be this kind of introduction to Premier League life for Erling Haaland. It didn't really surprise me that it came about sort of in the way that it did. Palace sort of falling foul to something similar that happened, to Villa at the end of last season when City, sewed up the title. A team goes to Manchester, takes a surprise 2-goal lead, and then it all kind of falls away. Because at the end of the day, City, they're almost like the best team in the game. When they get into that kind of situation, 2-0 is such a dangerous lead for teams like your Villas, like your Palaces, when you're against a team like City, because when they turn it on, they can just suddenly blow you away. And I think now you've added Haaland to that mix, and it's crazy. I mean, the only thing that I guess I do wonder is sort of how Haaland, places City sort of in terms of like the bigger picture of the season. Is he the player that sort of gets them that little bit further? We saw them fall just short in the Champions League last season. Is Haaland the guy that sort of bridges that gap that they've needed to fill, in order to get the Champions League success that they crave? And, it certainly seems like it's going to be the beginning of a fruitful relationship for him, City and Guardiola. But, is Pep going to perhaps tinker, maybe try and turn Haaland into some marauding defensive box-to-box midfielder because he's got those cyborg-like qualities? No, I'm joking about that, but I do think that Haaland really does have the potential to really make City, this complete machine that we've kind of thought they were for the last couple of seasons and then being proved wrong sort of at the business end of like the Champions League in particular. I don't know how you feel about Haaland sort of completing that vision for this Guardiola City side.
Yeah, I mean, it's an unbelievable addition. And you talk about it, over a season, like you said, like last year against Villa, just similar to this year against Crystal Palace, just the way the team can wake up and become unstoppable. Yeah, in a knockout competition, sometimes it just comes down to one or two matches that could be the difference. And now Haaland being another difference maker. We know they have players that can score and they can win even in bad performances, but now he gives them a little more verticality, which I think is a threat that allows probably more players to have a little bit more space, or him to be the difference of like you said, just that next step that could take them to the next level, or be, just dynamic in a way that they haven't in ways past, where on a bad day, teams can actually find ways to take points away from them. Now, just as a quick correction for me, As I talked about in Serie A, Napoli are only two games in and are still perfect after two games. I was looking at the top sort of 10 teams in the table and saw that, you know, there was nobody perfect on those points, but there were still teams with matches left to be played. And Harry Kane goal alert, by the way, for anybody that's watching this live, Harry Kane continues his tear. Now, Bayern. Let's talk about Bayern Munich, who are showing that they're mortal. You know, again, I go into the theme every year of like, oh, Bayern aren't as good as they were the year before. And then they just batter a few teams early on, or they just look in control. But this one's a little bit unique. They draw Mönchengladbach 1-1 in Bayern. Huge result for Gladbach. But if you look at the actual statistics, I think it was 20-something shots in the game. Jan Sommer made it was 20 shots on frame. Jan Sommer set a record of saves in the match, which was at 19, which is absolutely insane. Showing that, again, Bayern, who controlled everything. I listened to a lot of the sort of post-game press conferences and stuff, and they were sort of laughing at the idea of like, no, we're going to continue to play the way that we played. We completely dominated this game. Yes, we could have been more clinical, but like at 20 shots on frame, Jan Sommer being forced to make 19 of those, the 25th shot of the game being the first goal or the only goal for Bayern from Leroy Sané. I mean, what is your overall take in terms of not necessarily this match, but where Bayern are at this point in the season?
I mean, I think Bayern are in a good position. You know, their summer transfer window, I think, has been very, very good. You know, I think they're in a much healthier spot now than they were last season, when there were legitimate questions about them and sort of where they might be headed. I think that Bayern have started the season in very good form with a lot of momentum. And I don't really think that the Gladbach result changes anything. If anything, you know, we know that Jan Sommer is a quality goalkeeper on his day. And sometimes you just have one of these like blinding performances where a goalkeeper keeps a team out sort of almost single-handedly. I've seen Memo Ochoa do it a couple of times over the years while he was playing in France with Ajax. So, you know, sometimes a goalie is just inspired, manages to get a hand to pretty much everything, and it takes something special to beat them. I don't think it makes, you know, Bayern's performance, you know, any less impressive. You know, to create that many opportunities on goal certainly shows that they are heading the right way this season. You know, and there are going to be some teams that come up against them and really, really struggle. I mean, I think they've got a fantastic Champions League draw. I'm really keen to see how they duke it out with Barca. And, you know, I think as well, this Gladbach side, they had a lot of quality. They were disappointing last season, but they set the bar so high the year before that with that Champions League run that they enjoyed. And I think it took a while for them to sort of digest that, to move on from that. You know, and now some of those players are coming back into a bit of form. They always had the potential to be a quality outfit, you know, so it doesn't surprise me to see them running, you know, a team like Bayern fairly close, despite the fact that they did have to majorly rely on Sommer, you know, in form like that. So I don't know how you feel about it, but I wouldn't be too worried about it from a Bayern point of view. You know, I think some days you're going to, you know, stick seven goals past a team like they did Bochum the week before. Sometimes it's just not going to go in. I don't think this should be setting any alarm bells ringing in Bavaria.
Yeah, I agree. And when I listened to the press conference, they were laughing at this idea of like this constant comparison of like, has the team evolved their style of play with Mane there instead of Lewandowski? And they're like, Lewandowski wasn't just a target forward for us. He did so many other things that people just want to put him in this box and compare it to a new false nine type of narrative. But they weren't buying any of this sort of the us poking and prodding from the media side of like, how is this team different? They're like, we should have won this game. We're in cruise control. We're playing great football right now. You know, I would stay on the Bayern Munich conversation, but fortunately, because I've stepped in to replace LME for this episode, our producer Dez has honored me with an ability to talk about Arsenal here towards the end of the show. So I got to ask you, you know, as an outsider but an insider of the game, are Arsenal the real deal? You know, do they have the potential or the quality to keep this up? I mean, they squeaked this one out late in the match, but on one hand, you could criticize it as saying, yeah, but the quality of the game wasn't there. But on the other hand, you say this is a team just like any team, similar to a Manchester City, who late in games can find ways to grind out results. And it's not always going to be perfect, but if you can find ways to win, it's actually a sign of growth and the ability to stay in matches, even if you're not on your day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it is, you know, always a sign of great quality if you can win when not necessarily being at your best. But the thing that I've been so impressed with by Arsenal so far this season is there's just so much more coherency to the squad. I think they've made some very, very smart additions. I mean, some of them are no-brainers. I mean, like giving Saliba a chance finally in defence, you know, that has changed things massively, you know, for Arsenal at the back. And I think that, you know, the team now looks primed, you know, to really perform the way that Arteta has been preaching for the last couple of seasons. And, you know, they're finally, you know, ready to, you know, to sort of live up to the expectations that are being set down for them. So, yeah, I mean, I do think that they are going to be one of the top sides to watch and, you know, perhaps to beat this season in the Premier League. I don't think that, I'm not necessarily saying here and now they're going to be challenging for the title, but, you know, I do think they now have the quality certainly to be, you know, sort of properly established there in the top four. Yes, it's early days, but, you know, I think that the evolution in this Arsenal side has been quite clear to chart over some time. And, you know, I think it's finally, you know, starting to bear fruit now. And I think it must be a really exciting time to be an Arsenal fan, you know. And also, you know, I think with the result against Fulham looked better than they have been in recent years when they've sort of been yo-yoing between the Premier League and the Championship. So, you know, I don't think there's any shame necessarily in it only being a one goal winning margin.
Yeah, and on that Fulham note, and we'll leave the Arsenal talk in the rear view for now. How, you know, just in your take, you look at a Fulham, they defended for so long, you know, in these matches, and never seems like a recipe for success when you have to defend long periods. Obviously, the style of play and the team that they have, the speed that they have to be able to sit deeper for long periods of the game. But so how important is it for a lot of these teams? You know, you talked about Villa, you talked about West Ham, but when you look at towards the bottom of the table where you have your Leicester Cities, you know, you've got big name teams sitting at the bottom. How important is it for these teams, whether recently promoted or not, to get those early points to sort of try to, you knowing that some of these bigger names towards the bottom of the table are eventually going to find their form and clear themselves at the bottom of the table?
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of why I was so irritated about Villa losing to West Ham earlier, because if you watched, you know, West Ham were clearly sort of still trying to find their feet. I mean, we know that they have a lot of quality in their squad. It was just a matter of time before they found form. But, you know, when you're a team like Villa and you're supposedly aspiring to sort of like European qualification, you know, you have to take your opportunities against a team, you know, almost kind of kick them when they're down, so to speak. You know, and I think when teams cannot be that ruthless or don't have that streak in them, you know, then you're going to get punished in the Premier League, because at the end of the day, that quality will ultimately tell whether or not a team is putting the performance in or not, you know. So I think West Ham now sort of, I'm not going to say fluking the win, because, you know, Villa weren't brilliant. I do feel it was a wasted opportunity, but that is the kind of game that illustrates, you know, why you have to take the opportunity while teams are out of form, while they're still finding their feet, because it is going to be a very difficult and unforgiving Premier League season, I feel. And, you know, I'd feel more confident for a team like a Fulham, who have been able to you know, go toe-to-toe with Arsenal overnight for the most part of 90 minutes, than for Villa, who, you know, were unable to take that opportunity to beat a weakened West Ham side. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of teams who will be looking at some of these bigger sides sort of down the table, just thinking it's inevitable. It's a question of time, you know, when they start to pick up form and get back on song. So, no, taking it back to Arsenal, you know, I do think that Arsenal are going to be one of the pace setters this season. And I don't think it's something that's just going to fizzle out, you know, after the first couple of months of the season. I don't know how you feel about it, but you must feel pretty satisfied right now with the way that the team is performing.
Yeah, and it's ultimately, like you said, baby steps, right? That, like, being a Champions League contender year in and year out in the Premier League is an actual thing, right? To be competitive in that spot. And I think Arsenal have been very short of that, but getting closer and closer. That next step becomes a top four challenger. There's obviously becoming 6-7 teams now that are challenging for a top four. So that is the next step. And then you can talk about what a title looks like right now. But there's some much better teams still in the Premier League you got to get past. Now, quick word on Real Betis. Similar to Arsenal, overperforming probably expectations at the start of the season, perfect after three games in La Liga. Do you think they're the real deal in terms of their ability to sit towards the top, knowing that, you know, you're going through an evolution with Barcelona on one end, and then you've got your Real Madrid, who seem to always figure it out, but you know, an aging roster.
Yeah, I mean, I said last season, I think that Betis are close to being the real deal. I mean, we saw them pushing for glory on multiple fronts. You know, they had a good run in Europe. You know, they obviously went all the way in the Copa del Rey and they fell just short of Champions League qualification in La Liga. I think the stars are aligning for Betis to have a crack at the top four. I think they do have the quality. And when you've got a player like Borja Iglesias, who's on form, you know, scoring as consistently as he is at the moment, that's always going to stand you in good stead. You know, and I think if Betis can sort of, you know, sort out one or two or iron out one or two issues within their squad between now and the end of the transfer window, you know, I definitely think that they are well set. My only fear for them is sort of like one or two injuries to key guys. You know, Canales is quite a fragile player, but, you know, fantastic on his day when he's fit. Nabil Fekir as well. Like, an injury to one or two of those guys can be quite difficult for Betis to overcome, especially if it's sort of a medium to long-term injury. So, you know, squad depth could be their undoing at some point, but as long as everyone is fit and healthy, I certainly think that Betis, you know, definitely have a shot at Champions League qualification, and I don't know, maybe even, you know, having a crack at European glory as well, because they weren't actually that far off it last season. I just feel that they ultimately fell short because they were spread too thinly across multiple competitions. But fingers crossed, you know, they can keep this form up, because obviously as a Betico at heart, I'm delighted to see them doing so well.
Amazing. Well, depth is certainly going to be an issue, especially in a year like this, convoluted with cups and World Cups and all those types of things. So let's move on to our final thoughts. JJ, where are you headed this evening? And do you have any final thoughts of any matches around the globe that perhaps we didn't touch on?
Yeah, so I'm heading to Parc des Princes for PSG Monaco. I'm sure I'll recap it with the guys next week at some point when I'm next on the pod. But no, I mean, it's obviously, you know, one of the more prestigious games in Ligue 1, so one I'm certainly looking forward to. But no, I mean, it's just funny how there are so many of these high-scoring matches cropping up at the moment. You know, we saw Bayern thrashing Bochum. You've got Liverpool, you've got Celtic this weekend. And then you've had Montpellier winning 7-0 away at Brest in Ligue 1 today. It kind of feels like, I don't know, maybe there's something in the water over here in Europe. There just seems to be a lot more sort of high-scoring games.
It's a little more like a tennis match, you know, where you can't win every point. Sometimes you just got to let, you know, give up a game, recover, just shut it down, you know. It's a long year. People are just like, ah, let's take the loss. You know, we'll move on.
Yeah, I mean, it's surprising to see so many of them clustered together. It's almost like every time there's a game week where we're kind of talking about one team, you know, kind of having their ass absolutely handed to them by somebody else.
It's wild.
Today
it's wild.
It was Brest.
and you know, I've been in probably the biggest two thrashings. One against Kaiserslautern, and I got sent off. So the team actually got thrashed after I got sent off. It was real tight then until I got the sending off. But that feeling you get, and then also in a national team. In a national team jersey, getting a real beating in a Gold Cup final by Mexico, those hurt. When you lose by that much, it's pride, it's embarrassment, it's all of those things. You rarely ever see this. I mean, we just saw LAFC, the top team in the league, start with Gareth Bale and Carlos Vela up top, take a real beating as well from Austin FC, not by a massive scoreline, but, you know, really seeing some of these things happen that you don't expect. It's almost, I don't know if it's a style of play thing or teams sticking to their guns or whatever, but it certainly seems like it's pouring goals right now across the globe, and certainly something to talk about every single week.
Yeah, and I don't think Scott Parker got that memo, judging by his comments after Bournemouth getting taken apart by Liverpool. So, yeah, I mean, some managers, I think it would be ringing the alarm bells for. I mean, I know that some people feel like, yeah, he perhaps should have been more concerned with the way that his team performed. But, you know, maybe it's just indicative of the gulf in quality between some of these sides, especially like a Liverpool who we were just, you know, waiting for them to wake up, really.
Yeah, I agree. Well, listen, we are going to wrap up this podcast. And as a reminder, tomorrow on In Soccer With Trust, we'll be recapping the weekend from a U.S. men's national team roster perspective. So make sure you tune in to that one. And that's it. And thank you so much, by the way, for listening to K Golasso. Please take a minute. You know, it means a lot. Leave a rating and a review on your favorite podcast platform. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere you listen to your podcast. We're also available as videos. So subscribe to us on YouTube. And make sure you visit YouTube, hit that like button, hit that subscribe, make sure you have those notifications on so you can make sure you get every single one of these videos, either in live or not live forms. Thank you so much, Jonathan Johnson. All the best getting to Parc des Princes. All the best for PSG against Monaco. Thank you so much to our producer, Des Norris. And until next time, Peace out from us.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick Six, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick Six has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick Six is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.